I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today I have an incredible writer and a very good friend sitting in the studio with me. His name is Jose de Pierola. Jose, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I think you've been a guest on our show before, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Well, this time we're going to talk about your brand new book called Fabulations, and it is your very first book, a fiction, a collection of stories that you wrote in English.
That's correct.
And it's a really fantastic book. I was fortunate enough to read an advanced copy, and these stories just blew me away with their intelligence and their imagination. And
thank
so
you.
Maybe we can go deeply into some of these stories and how you find that part of the brain that has these kind of details, Jose. It's just really, really fantastic. Evoked for me in many ways not only the Latin American great storytellers like Borges and Cortázar and Márquez, but also a little bit of Edgar Allan Poe, a little bit of Italo Calvino, but with a really modern, contemporary, I should say, because modern might be a literary phrase, but with a contemporary eye. You know, I love that some of your characters, you know, even though, you know, some take place, you know, generations ago, others pull out iPhones, you know.
That's correct. Thank you very much for the wonderful introduction. I'm really humbled by, you know, the comparisons. It's a kind of short story that actually is not only the first time I write in English, but it's the first time I try in this form.
But before we get too deeply into the interview, I should probably read a little bio. And so our listeners know who you are, if they don't already. Jose de Pierola is from Lima, Peru. He's a fiction writer, translator, and literary critic. He worked for more than 10 years as a computer consultant before he left his career to complete a PhD in literature at the University of California, San Diego. That's really an interesting detail that you worked 10 years as a computer consultant before you went on to get a degree in literature. And maybe we can have time to talk a little bit about that and how that mathematical thinking might use that in the creative process. He has many novels, all of them in Spanish at this point, El Camino de Regreso, Un Beso del Infierno, and many more. He has children's stories. He has young adult novels. He has collections of stories like Sur y Norte and Máquina del Tiempo. Ooh, the time machine. I bet that's awesome. He has translated The Art of Fiction by Henry James and L'Étranger by Albert Camus into Spanish. And from what I understand, your translation of L'Étranger is used now as the primary text to access that book for in the school system in Peru.
That's correct. In high schools, they have this program that's called Plan Lector in Spanish, which requires high school students to read about 10 books a year.
Wow.
And they have a list for each school. And L'Étranger is one of these lists.
And of course, that Albert Camus novel we know in English as The Stranger. And let's see what else. There's so much here, but Fabulations is his first work in English. And the best part of your biography, Jose, is that you teach here at the University of Texas, El Paso, in the Department of Creative Writing. And we've been colleagues for many years now.
Yes, we have. And I feel very fortunate to be able to teach here in this program because it's a very unique program. The location is exceptional. And our students are fantastic, as you know.
And I bet you were probably really interesting to watch in a graduate seminar, going back and forth between English and Spanish, depending on what student you're communicating with and where that student is from.
Yeah, that's correct. And that's something we all do, right? And that's one of the wonderful things about our program, that we have these two languages coexisting in the classroom, and there's no conflict. You know, if anything, it's a brotherhood of interests and mutual understanding.
Oh, I like that, brothering. Brother as a verb. That's awesome. You know, it's funny that you bend a language like that. I imagine because you started writing in Spanish that there must have been, well, first of all, why did you decide you wanted to write a book in English rather than write a book in Spanish and then translate into English?
Yeah, well, there are two reasons. The first one is that when I came to the U.S., I didn't speak English. Uh-huh. And like most immigrants, I had to work on whatever I could.
In downtown Los Angeles, right?
In downtown Los Angeles.
When it was still bad neighborhood.
Yes, I worked in a basement, actually, for about a year and a half. So I had to learn English sort of in the street. And
Which is kind of hard in downtown Los Angeles those days because everybody speaks Spanish.
Absolutely. and without access to any systematic way of learning the language.
Wow.
So it took me a long time to be able to communicate and longer to be able to write.
Wow.
So English, you know, my engagement with the language was always something in the back of my mind, and how difficult it was for me to master it as a speaking language, but then also as a writing language.
Mm-hmm.
But my practice of writing was always in Spanish. But when I start teaching in this program, some of our students, as you know, write in English. So I wanted to feel competent enough to advise them as I advise students who write in Spanish. So I set the challenge to write a short story collection in English.
Mm-hmm.
This was about 4 years ago.
When you made the decision to do it,
yes.
4 years ago.
Yeah, and I started working on that short story collection, and it was extremely difficult, as you can imagine. So I stopped that process for a little while, that project.
Uh-huh.
And I start translating into English some works, which actually my publisher in Peru asked me to translate José María Arguedas' short stories into English, which I did. And it was a fantastic project. And then I translated other traditional tales from Spanish into English, too. That gave me, in a way, another entry point to writing in English. So I went back to my short story collection. But I got a little stuck again.
Uh-huh.
So I stopped about a year and a half ago. And I said, maybe I need to try a different form.
Right.
And for a long time, I've been thinking about this form, which I call fabulation.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it might be a good idea to try that form in English. And that's when I started working on this book. It took me about a year. But I feel that now my engagement with the language is different. Hopefully competent enough to write.
Well, definitely, that's for sure. What's interesting, I was going to ask you, you know, before an interview, I usually have some questions prepared. And, you know, many times I never actually get to the questions because the conversations have a life of their own, and which is the way I prefer it. But one of the questions was I was going to ask you, as a writer, as a fiction writer, and I don't really like to make that distinction, or I should say the distinction between fiction and poetry to me is not very rigid, you know, that poets and fiction writers kind of operate, you know, in many ways on the same level. And one of those ways is that we can follow language into a landscape. We could follow rhythm.
Absolutely.
And so the question I was going to ask you, and I think you've already answered it, so I'd like to just kind of, you know, focus on it a little bit, is when you're writing in Spanish and you're following the language, does that take you into different forms and different parts of the imagination than when you attempted to write in English, or not attempted, you did, when you wrote in English? Did that somehow affect the form? And it sounds like you're saying not only did it affect the form, but for you, it created a new form.
Absolutely. No, yes, you are right. When you speak in Spanish or English, you access parts of your emotion, parts of your personal history that are different.
Right.
So the expression and the story that comes out is going to be different.
Absolutely.
As well. So it's a very fortunate, actually, circumstance, because you can access different parts of your creative mind depending on the language you use, and something that you know very well because you're bilingual too. So I think that that's was one of the challenges and one of the wonderful things I've discovered in this process, that I'm accessing parts of my creative mind that I have not been able to tap into from Spanish and vice versa. But one thing that is wonderful too is that those parts don't cancel one another.
Right.
So you know that you can just go back and forth. In the same way that when you're writing, you know that you have to have an analytical mind at one moment, and and another moment you have to tap into your subconscious.
Right.
When you're writing in one language and another, you also know that you can switch to the other language and to try out something to see how it works.
Well, that's really interesting. You know, I've been reading a lot of books on lay neuroscience for this novel that I'm working on about a kid with a serious brain disorder. And one of the things that the neuroscientists say, and this is just kind of widely accepted, is that we code different languages in different parts of the brain.
That's
correct. So your English is in a different part of the brain as your Spanish. And so when you're accessing your English, the neurons that are firing connected to memories and connecting to emotions, yeah, they're going to be completely different. And I had never really thought about that until this conversation about trying to write in Spanish, for example. But and these stories, they're wild. They go on to some really imaginative landscapes. And did following your language in English, Did it bring you, like you said, to parts of the imagination that maybe you may not have accessed in Spanish? And how did it create this new form that you call fabulations? And what is fabulations? That's the name of the book, Fabulations. And when I first heard that title, I go, oh, I should know that word.
Yes. Well, I've been thinking about this form for a long time. When I did my PhD, I wrote on the historical novel.
Uh-huh.
And
you've written historical novels in Spanish.
Yes. So I was thinking about, you know, what are the issues with the historical novel, uh-huh. but also what are the issues with history in general? And what would be a form that will not be a historical novel, but at the same time would call into question history, will allow us to think and engage with history mm-hmm. in a different way. But at the same time, I wanted to find a form in which we can ask the reader to think about serious, important questions mm-hmm. without being...
Didactic,
exactly. Without, you know, having a very programmatic writing in the process. So I thought about this form for a long time, and once in a while I would read something that inspires something, and then I would write something along these lines. And when I came to this project, I realized that the form I was looking for, it's a combination of fable, history, and fiction. Fable in the sense that it will ask you to think about something important.
Right.
But also fable in the sense that it will be a short, quick read.
Right. Some of these stories are incredibly short, like a page or a half a page.
Exactly. Yeah. History in the sense that they are set in a particular time and place right. in our common history. But also history in the sense that we'll ask you to question what is history and how we write history. Mm-hmm. And all of these bound together by the tools of the craft of fiction. And that's why the combination of these three, I call a fabulation.
Yeah, it's you know, it's like I said, when I first saw the title, like there was a part of me that go, yeah, I know what fabulations means. I don't need to look it up. You know? It's like a word that has always existed, but you uncovered it.
Thank you.
You know, a lot of these stories, you said that you wanted to write about, and I'm paraphrasing, but and so if you want to re-articulate it to clarify it, but you're talking about there's certain ideas that you wanted to express without being didactic. And I'm wondering, when you start a story, specifically in this book, when you start a story, do you know what that idea is, or does the language lead you to the idea that you've already been preoccupied or obsessed with, because us writers are obsessed with particular ideas, and then it kind of came out of the language, or did you find the language to express what you wanted?
That's a great question. As you know, as writers, you can go both ways.
Right.
But in my case, I tend to start working with language first.
Mm.
So I have a big idea of a situation, of a character, even a line, and I start from there and see where language leads me to.
Right.
In the process, I discover what the story is trying to say. And there's this wonderful iteration, you know, because you write a draft and then you go back to the story and you discover or uncover what the story is trying to do. And then you add your edits. And in this process, there's a moment in which the story finally is saying what it was meant to say from the beginning, even though you did not know what the story was trying to say. Of course, all of this is fed by my interests, my demons, my fears, and so on and so forth, right? So it's not like it's an independent expression, something that's outside me, but it's expressed through a process.
See, that's a great answer to that question, because I think there are indeed a lot of ideas in this book, a lot of issues, but they feel organic. They don't feel like I'm being preached to. They don't feel like, you know, like you're intellectualizing. I think the poetry matters in this book, and that's clearly coming out. So
yeah, well, one of the challenges, you know, when you write fiction, one of the key issues is to create a character that is complex, vivid enough that will persist in the mind of your reader.
Right.
And that's why I don't call this fiction, because I call it fabulation, because it does not have enough time to create such character.
Right, right.
Right. However, you need to use the tools of fiction to make the characters live long enough for the story.
Right, right. Well, that's interesting. There's a story, I think it's the penultimate story. No, it's the last story. It's called He Knew of Trees. And I really love the language in here, but you come up to this line, which really struck out to me, where the man who knew trees says, knowledge is boundless. The study of a humble grain of wheat can consume the life of a genius. And I thought that was really beautifully stated. And I'm wondering if we can unpack that a little bit. And then, because that sounds like something that, it's a quotable quote, you know, it's something, it reminds me a little bit of that famous Shakespeare quote, you know, I could bound myself in a nutshell and count myself king of infinite universe. Tell us a little bit about that line. And did the line come to you out of the language, or is that a line that you've been holding?
It came out of the language. All the lines, everything written in this book, it comes through that process, mm-hmm. Process I mentioned before. None of these lines is something I've been, you know, sort of holding off for a future
project. Nonetheless, they're lines that express ideas that you must have held.
Oh, absolutely. No, but what happens is in the process of writing, you discover the idea you already had in your mind.
Right. And you go, dang, that's a pretty good idea.
Exactly. This is how I was thinking about this issue, right? And knowledge is a very interesting word because it's been intellectualized, using the term you used before. But in my view, knowledge is a relationship with the world.
Uh-huh.
So the way in which you relate to the world generates knowledge and vice versa. So it is a reciprocal relationship with the world that generates this wealth of information that we call knowledge, right? Yeah. How to operate in the world, how to operate with other people, and so on and so forth. So that's why it's boundless, because it depends on one person's relationship with the world.
Right.
And as we know, our relationships with the world change and vary and grow and shrink. So there's no limit to how we relate with the world.
Right.
Even our relationship with something as distant as a star, right? Probably you've noticed one evening that, oh, there was a star that you never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your generating knowledge, right?
Right.
And it's a knowledge because it's based on your connection with that star. Right. And the next night or the next season, you go back and look at that same star, and there's going to be something different in you.
Right.
So
the star transforms.
For you, exactly.
Right.
So even if you and you start studying that star, you know, you can spend your life learning about that star.
Yeah. That's interesting, because it reminds me of, you know, every day I park my car in the parking garage and I walk across campus, and it's kind of a walk. And every day I discover a new tree.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful experience, you know, because I like running, and I go for a long run
mm-hmm.
about once a week or so. And when I run, usually run the same route.
Yeah, me too.
Here in El Paso, I go through the bike path that uh-huh. is near Rio Grande. And the amazing thing is every time you run, you discover something. You discover the trees, you learn the trees,
right.
But then you start discovering things on each one of these trees, something different. The shade of the leaves, the branches, their relationship to one another. And sometimes when I'm writing, I'm thinking about that story by Borges, Funes, El Memorioso.
Yeah.
And I said, well, how amazing would it be to just go through this route and remember all of that? Yet, at the same time, how fortunate I am
that I
don't have such memory, because each run is a new experience.
Right, yeah. Intelligence is not memory. Intelligence is processing the memories that you have available to you.
Absolutely.
And so, for you, the writing process is like taking a run.
Absolutely.
Because you write yourself into a landscape.
Yes, and one of the things, and you as a writer know too, is that when you edit, it's like going through the same route, but you're discovering that new branch, that new tree in the same route.
Right.
So, and you're sort of redesigning that landscape for the imagination that your reader is going to go through as well.
Right. And when you re-enter it, not only do you notice more of the details that may be significant to your run, but you also kind of observe yourself as well.
Absolutely.
And learn a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely.
Knowledge is boundless.
Yes, and writing, you know, it's a process of rediscovering. this rediscovering yourself, rediscovering your relationship with the world, rediscovering what you think about the world.
I'm talking to José de Pierola. His new book in English, his very first collection of stories in English called Fabulations. And there's one story that really strikes me. Is it's called Would I Still Be Me? And there is a father and a little girl, and they're sitting in a cafe, and the father gives her a watch. And he tells her that, you know, every molecule, every atom within her is going to be renewed and regenerated. So within 7 years, she's not going to have any part of her matter or her existence, you know, her physical matter is going to be completely different. And so she begins to question, well, you know, would I still be me if all my atoms were replaced? And that's a fact of physics that you're expressing. And
absolutely,
we really do not have the same matter that we did when we were 7 years old, or, you know, or different stages of our life. But as a little girl, she's thinking about, will I still be me? And this question drives her throughout her entire life. Can you tell us a little bit about this story? And because it's an interesting form in this story. It goes from that first experience, and then she's working for the Los Angeles Times, and then she's, you know, later on, but it follows, and each time there's another really beautiful metaphor about this idea. Like in one, there's a ship that's sailing across the sea, and, mm-hmm. and they're on a journey so long that they have to start replacing different parts of the ship. And after several years, the entire ship has been replaced, and she wonders, is it the same ship? How did this story come about?
Yeah, well, the main drive for the story, actually, is a conversation I have with one of my daughters.
Nice. That's beautiful.
Because I was trying to explain this process that our body goes through by renewing itself. And every certain number of years, every cell of your body is being renewed and replaced. Every atom of your body is different. And my daughter asked the question, so am I still me after that, right? And it's beautiful because the issue of identity is something I've been thinking about for a long time. The issue of identity in terms of being an immigrant, right? Being now a Peruvian who has lived in the U.S. for more than 20 years, a Peruvian who speaks Spanish, that's a native language, and now is trying to write in English, and so on and so forth. So the issue of identity is something that's always been in the back of my mind. So I began writing the story just trying to think about this moment in which I was talking to my daughter. But then the story evolved, as we said before, and wrapped in itself around the issue of identity and different views of identity. So the character, throughout her life, she's questioning her identity, but in a metaphorical way, in an indirect way, which I think is a very humbling way of understanding who we are, because the Western tradition has always reinforced the idea that there's essential you and a center of you that you have to reinforce, that you have to protect, and so on and so forth.
And we usually identify that you as the body.
Exactly. Or the mind, right? Depending on what tradition you go through. But in fact, you know, we, who we are, is something that is a process in flux. Something that's never static and never rests. And I think that acknowledging that makes a lot of things easier. A lot of conflicts maybe could be even resolved, or at least lessened, if we understand that we are not a solid, fixed identity, but we're always in flux.
And that's kind of brushes on, like, a lot of your stories on mystical ideas of, you know, what is consciousness and, you know, what is the body when it comes to, you know, identifying about who we are.
Exactly.
You know? And it's really a fantastic story. The name of the collection is Fabulations, and it's these incredibly imaginative, intelligent stories by José de Pierola. Let me ask you a little bit about these images, because I think the book, like Would I Still Be Me, there's an image opposite, and it looks like a woman, and these little atoms are flying away from her. And every story has its own image. And can you talk a little bit about how these images came about?
Yes. When I was writing the book, I just, for some reason, I thought that they needed some illustrations, some images. And perhaps because I'm always fascinated by the medieval books that have images, have, you know, beautiful capitals uh-huh. with landscapes and characters.
The old stories had etchings or woodcuts.
they were called illuminations, right?
Illuminations,
and
uh-huh.
those illuminations were part of the book.
Right.
And the kind of book I was writing, I thought, I will need something like that. So when the publisher agreed to publish his book, I suggested, you know, I would like the book to have illuminations, contemporary illuminations. So she hired an illustrator, but she didn't like the drawings because they had to work with the stories, right? So she tried again, a second one, and she didn't like the story, the drawings. At that moment, you know, I asked my wife, which is a wonderful artist.
Oh, she's a great artist.
Christine Forster.
Forster.
You can see her work at christineforster.com. And I said, we'd like to illustrate my book. And so she did a couple of tests. I sent it to my publisher and she liked it.
You know, the beautiful thing about the images, they're like the stories in that they almost seem like they've always existed, yet they're fresh.
Yes.
They're new. And
exactly.
that's what the stories are like.
Thank you. Thank you. And the images are wonderful. I'm absolutely blessed that, you know, the images make the book, I think, a better experience to the readers and give the readers other entry point to what I'm trying to do in the story. And I'm fortunate that Christine can do that with her drawings.
I've been talking to Jose de Pierola, his first book in English called Fabulations. I'm Daniel Chacon. Thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire. Jose, thank you for joining us in the studio.
Thank you for having me. And if you want to see a little more of my work, it's available on my website, josedepierola.com, and you have a link to the book too.
And I'd like to thank our producer, Stefania Castro. I'm Daniel Chacon. We'll see you next time on Words on a Wire.